Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, October 20th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Oregon's dirty little secret.
And how to save a stream, plant more plants, then get out of the way.
And Oregon's native son, Craig Rosebrow, goes to law school and starts a magazine.
Portland area weather today, partly sunny, high around 63. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low around 52. And then tomorrow, rain is likely.
And first, regional news from around Cascadia. Oregon, a state known for its greenwashing, has an environmental dirty little secret. 40% of Oregon's electricity grid comes from, wait for it, coal. Oregonians concerned about public health, climate change, and green energy are planning to rally tomorrow at noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square to demonstrate public demand for transitioning off dirty coal in Oregon. My guest this morning is Robin Everett, Associate Regional Representative of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. So coal is something that we here in Oregon don't think about much. It's kind of, so to speak, dusted under the carpet. We think of ourselves as so very, very green. Talk a little bit about the rally, and there's a tour of western states of coal-fired power plants. Talk a little bit about
that.
That's
right. Yes, you are right, and we do think of ourselves as very clean and green here, and a lot of people don't know that 40% of our electricity comes from coal. And so we are having a rally at Pioneer Square tomorrow on Wednesday at noon. And we are going to have quite an event. It's going to have a 50-foot inflatable coal plant, and we're going to have a really great performance by switch of a coal train going through the northwest to the Boardman coal plant. And we are going to have some very special speakers at this event. We are bringing out a rancher named L.J. Turner from Wyoming and Northern Cheyenne tribal leader Barbara Braided Hair from Montana to talk about how our coal use here in Oregon is destroying their land in the Powder River Basin through destructive mining practices.
So here in Oregon, according to numbers I've read, this 40%, that's rather staggering. What sort of action is being taken to try to narrow that down a little bit? It seems that because we don't think about this, there seems to be nothing, no plans in the, no pun intended, the pipeline, as it were, to try to reduce that were eradicated if possible. Why don't we hear very much about this?
Well, we are trying to make it so that we hear a whole lot more about it. And there's a couple processes that the Sierra Club is involved in right now to try and reduce that staggering coal number. And one of them is the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. And they are a regional body that devises the electricity mix for the Northwest. And they just did a series of hearings all through the Northwest, and we just had a hearing last week in Portland, and 150 people came out to say that they wanted to have a plan that got us off of coal. So we're hoping that we will get a plan that will help us address some of the coal issues. We are also working with Portland General Electric in their integrated resource plan. Right now, Portland General Electric, they run Oregon's only coal plant out in Boardman, and they are devising their 20-year energy plan, and they want to keep burning coal at the Boardman coal plant till 2040. And so we're hoping that we can really make a strong public push for getting PGE to change their mind and doing an earlier shutdown date for their Boardman coal plant.
Some people would say that this is shutting down the coal plants is one way of providing a boost for other types of what they call transition fuels, such as natural gas and other fossil fuels. Have you encountered any of those questions?
Oh, sure. I mean, we do. But what we see the real boost is the boost for renewable energy. Right now, our energy use is running flat. We're, you know, not increasing. And the only way to really create a market for new renewable energy is to start backing off of the old dirty energy. And so we see transitioning off of coal plants onto renewable energy a really great forward-thinking approach that is doable.
So, Roman, once again, just give listeners, if you would, the info for tomorrow. There's a rally. Can you tell people where and when and all that, please?
Yes, it's on Wednesday, tomorrow, at noon at Pioneer Square. And we're going to be right on the corner of Morrison and 6th. And you won't be able to miss us because that 50-foot coal plant will be pretty tall. And also, for those who can't make it to the rally, there is going to be an evening program at the Sierra Club office at 7 p.m. at 1821 Southeast Ankeny. And the speakers that I mentioned will have a more in-depth discussion about coal mining and the Powder River Basin.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Roman Everett, Associate Regional Representative of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. Thanks again, Roman.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Forest Ecology and Management, a professional journal extruded by researchers from the College of Forestry at Oregon State University and the U.S. Forest Service's Pacific Northwest Research Station, has it that global warming is good for trees. The specious study concludes, thanks to ample funding from the timber industry, that climate change could increase overall productivity in the Pacific Northwest forest during the next century. On the minus side, growth could decrease in the lower elevation forests that have accounted for more than 80% of the region's timber harvest in recent years. The study did not analyze forest management practices, genetic limitations, and changes in natural disturbances such as disease, insects, and fire that can also affect productivity.
So I guess all they studied then was productivity, and that's how you trace it straight back to the timber industry funding the study.
And that's what the forest is all about.
That's exactly it. It's just a crop, people. It's just a crop. Resistance, Journal of the Earth Liberation Movement, is activist Craig Rosebrough's latest enterprise. The fall edition focuses on the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, which is blood whalers worldwide. It also includes an article on unknown activists sabotaging Encana oil pipelines in British Columbia. Based in Arizona, where Rosebrough is attending law school, the magazine names Shell Oil Company as its eco-terrorist of the season. Whatever laptop radicals think of Rosebrough, he is true to the cause and still shaking things up.
The frequency and intensity of toxic algae blooms are increasing, according to a study published in July by the Oregon State University Extension Service. The blooms are probably caused by water flow changes, the spread of invasive plant species, and an increase in nutrients. Logging, farming, sewage discharge, detergent use, and other factors have increased the nutrient content of Oregon waters. But in the end, the blooms are one of the proliferating symptoms of global warming. In the last 3 years, there have been 30 blooms. Five of this year's public health advisories are still in effect, including at Blue Lake in East Multnomah County.
Then it can kill you. It's dangerous stuff. The DEQ says, and why would it lie, that what the Willamette River needs is plants. The department is dead right in this case. Ecologists have been calling for bioremediation for years now. Nearly 70% of the streams and rivers in the basin are too warm to protect salmon, trout, and other sensitive cold water fish. 80% of streams that run through cities and farms are severely compromised. Almost half of the 11,000-plus miles of streams in the basin have a shortage of tree cover and streamside plants. But streams on forest lands are in relatively good shape. So are rivers and streams in relatively unpopulated areas. The solution is more vegetation, fewer people.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Yesterday, the Obama administration announced that the nation's federal medical marijuana laws will take a kinder, gentler turn. The Justice Department told federal prosecutors that targeting people who use or provide medical marijuana in strict compliance with state laws was not a good use of their time. But suppliers are still in limbo and possibly in prison as they face a tangled mesh of state laws and regulations. Providers are still at risk of prosecution, is what it means.
Well, in Boise, Idaho, the fight over grazing rights has been long and bitter. Yesterday, the Bureau of Land Management agreed to live by U.S. District Judge Lynn Windmill's ruling that forbids rancher Mick Carlson from letting his sheep graze near Partridge Creek along the Salmon River. Windmill's order was only temporary, and a hearing has been scheduled for November 2nd. The Bureau of Land Management now says it wants the court date canceled. Windmill wrote that Carlson's grazing could cause irreparable harm to bighorns, which wildlife managers say catch deadly diseases from their domesticated cousins. Not only that, of course, it ruins the watershed, which compromises salmon. And once again, cultivating industrial hemp would solve these rural counties' financial woes, grazing, timber harvesting, and the like. Liam, what have you got?
Across Cascadia's rural counties, people are just giving up. There are no jobs. There are plenty of options and opportunities out there. Alternative energy development, industrial hemp production, innovative microdeals designed to anticipate future markets. But banks are still sitting on TARP funds, startups aren't starting up, and no one's hiring. Forget working for large national firms. They've long since decamped for low-wage third-world shores. Yesterday, county figures came as a surprise. The Portland metro area's unemployment level rose in September, exceeding the statewide average, and many rural rates dropped. But the numbers just reflected loss of hope and American ingenuity.
Here's some news from downstate that you won't hear around the Portland area. According to an article that appeared in the Ashland Tidings, some 7,600 acres of forest land outside Ashland will be thinned. There's that word again, to help protect against a wildfire under a project approved by the U.S. Forest Service. In other words, they're going to cut down trees to protect McMansions. That's really all it boils down to. Called the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project. Sounds good, doesn't it? There's a greenwash for you. It includes portions of the Ashland watershed, source of the city's municipal water supply, and land next to homes in the urban wildlife interface, McMansion. Mike, we are in the process of trying to talk to Darren Bogus, the regional director with the Nature Conservancy. Various environmental groups down in southern Oregon are questioning the wisdom of these thinning projects, which, of course, is a thinly disguised code word for logging in what should be and what in many cases actually is protected forest. And don't forget, these are watersheds. These are sources of drinking water, sources of spawning grounds for salmon. Federal stimulus money, in this case about $2 million already, has been earmarked to help carry out the multi-year project. And, of course, money pouring into rural communities is always welcome, and it tends to blind people to the, again, no pun intended, downstream realities that we're all going to be paying for in the future.
This has been Eric Cascadia for Tuesday, October 20th, 2009. Engineering is Janet Anderson. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBU AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
You're listening to All Natural, Free Range, Non-Syndicated, KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members, and welcome new members.
Coming up, flashpoints. Historian and journalist Gareth Porter, how current U.S. policy in Afghanistan will probably strengthen the insurgency, and Catherine Austin Fitz, first in a series, Anatomy of a Financial Coup d'Etat.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.